You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 424 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, coming to you live on this Thursday evening into Friday morning. I appreciate a little bit of patience. I was planning to do a podcast in back-to-back days, but we decided to spread it out just a little bit, have a Friday podcast, kick off the weekend in the right frame of mind. I will say, if you missed a sort of a, you know, quote-unquote part one of this podcast, I would definitely recommend going back and listening to that from Wednesday. We referenced a lot of stuff about the Kent Bazemore buzz in the trade market. And in fact, Zach Lowe of ESPN referenced a lot of Bazemore stuff on his most recent podcast, The Lowe Post over at ESPN, mentioning that, you know, Brian Anderson and a 2019 first-round pick might make some sense for Bazemore. That's not a deal that I would do, but for more on that and my sort of full thoughts on the Bazemore saga, please go back and listen to the previous podcast, episode 423, and definitely go back and listen to the entire podcast because that's sort of the extension of this particular show. Before we get into the mailbag portion, which will be most of the podcast, I do want to hit on one thing that people were definitely asking me about in sort of various forms, and that's the fan-friendly concession pricing that the Hawks announced last week. This is not new, and since it was not in the last couple of days, but it's something I haven't talked about on the podcast just yet. The Hawks made some bold claims talking about how they were going to be the first team to kind of do this in the NBA world. It's definitely a cheap thing, and definitely has a parallel to what the Atlanta Falcons have done in their new building at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. The Hawks are talking a lot about their new building, and as they should, and Phillips Arena is still standing in the same spot, but the entire basically, the entire inside of the building has been overhauled, and that'll be opening up in October. But part of that is reduced pricing on concessions. $1 chips, $2 candy, pretzels, bottled water, $3 fries, hot dogs, nachos, bottled sodas, and then, you know, up from there to bottomless popcorn at $4, which is something I'll be taking a lot of advantage of, I will say, on press row. But one of those things where this is definitely a cool idea by the Hawks to get people in the building. I do think that, you know, ticket prices are more important than concession prices in a lot of ways, but it was definitely well received by Falcons fans, including myself, having attended a few games over there at Mercedes-Benz, to have the very cheap pricing when compared to other venues. Obviously, this is not cheap compared to, you know, outside venues, but at the same time, you know, you're going to a sporting event. I think at this point in time in 2018, you were conditioned to spend more on concessions, and the Hawks are doing a little bit to make that a little bit easier on the consumer. So probably a good idea there from the Hawks. Of course, not everything's going to be cheap. I will say, you know, this is only 12 items that they've said are going to be under $5 on premises. But at the same time, it's a good idea, a good piece of marketing from the Hawks, and we'll see what kind of turnarounds they get from that in terms of selling extra tickets, all that fun stuff. So one more thing before we get to the mailbag questions, and that's that sort of on the power rankings front, there are now three prominent outlets ranking the Hawks at number 30 before the season starts. That's CBS, ESPN, and NBC Sports, all putting the Hawks dead last. I disagree with that, frankly. I talked about that on the podcast already a little bit. But I think the Hawks are in the bottom five, but certainly a little bit better than a few teams. You know, the Knicks are my favorite pick to be number 30 this year because of Kristaps Porzingis' injury and his absence. But there's a few teams I think the Hawks are certainly at least have the claim to be better than at this point, especially as currently constructed with Kent Bazemore on the roster and with Dwayne Dedmon on the roster. John Collins, of course, having a bigger role now. Torian Prince. There are some better pieces on this roster than some of the teams around the league in terms of the availability. It kind of comes down to what you think about Trae Young as a rookie point guard, how much he's going to play, et cetera. But that's something to point out there. And also, the South Point Casino in Las Vegas released their title odds this week, and the Hawks were by far dead last at 750-1. That's a lofty price. We saw 1,000-1 early on in the offseason at a couple different places. Obviously, the Hawks are not going to be winning the title this year. I'm sorry to break it to you, Hawks fans, but the 2019 NBA title will not be won by the Atlanta Hawks. But still, one of those things where I think the Hawks actually are being a little bit disrespected at this point in time. I'm not a huge fan of playing that kind of card and talking about disrespect, especially in early August. But the Hawks, I think, are a little bit undersold at this point in time. Before we get into the mailbag questions, please, I want to take a moment to remind everybody to subscribe to the podcast. I really appreciate those who have already done that to this point in time. It's been huge to help the podcast grow and help you tell your friends about the show, all that fun stuff. Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Player.fm. Also, every single episode of the podcast is hosted on PeachtreeHoops.com, and I do a good job of tweeting all the podcasts out at Locked On Hawks on Twitter, as well as my personal account at BT Rowland. So please check that out. Subscribe today. Leave some 5-star feedback if you like the show, and please tell us if there's anything you want us to improve on. I know one popular item is that I talk too fast. My apologies on that. I'm trying to slow down a little bit. It's kind of just my diction overall. It's something I've been working on for a very long time. So hopefully you guys are patient with me, and I will do the best that I can moving forward in that area. But I hear that, I promise, and I'm going to try to improve in the future. But at any rate, please subscribe to the podcast. Thank you for already doing that. And after this short break, we'll be back again to talk about the mailbag questions that came in the last couple of days. All right, we're back, and the first question comes from Sam McBuckets on Twitter, and he asks, what are your expectations from Taurean Prince this season, and how much do you think his contract extension will be if the Hawks were to give him one in the near future? And also, as sort of a supplementary question to that, Andrew on Twitter asked if I think Lloyd Pierce's presence will get Taurean Prince's defense back on track. Let's talk about defense first because of that second question. Last year, I was very vocal about Taurean's defense being a disappointment to me. He was a pretty good defender in year one. As a rookie, he was definitely getting more effort on end of the floor. Year two, we saw a pretty big regression there. Because of his offensive improvement, which we'll talk about here in a second, I think that was probably lost because most people in general like offense more than defense and pay closer attention to offense than defense. So I think it's definitely important to note that he did improve as an overall player in year two, but defensively, he definitely regressed. Last season, he was 79th among small forwards in ESPN's real plus minus metric. That's very, very bad. And the Hawks as a team were 4.4 points per 100 possessions better without him on the floor. That's with Prince on the bench. That's pretty insane, honestly, considering he was the only real player on the roster that was like a natural small forward sized player. And considering his physical tools, there's no reason that he needs to be a bad defender. And he actually was that last year. The only guys on the roster where the Hawks were worse with them on the court last year defensively were Dennis Schroeder, who was, of course, very bad defensively last year, and Marco Bellinelli, who might be the worst defensive player in the league. So pretty damning stats there when we talk about Taurean Prince. I think, of course, he's better than those guys defensively, but last year was not great for that. I will say, though, again, as I mentioned before, on the flip side, the Hawks were actually much better with Prince on the floor during his rookie season, and I think I've seen some clips, and of course, thinking back to breaking down film with him as a rookie, and when he was coming in sort of flying around, and honestly, when he was drafted, I think the expectation was, and this was for me as well, that he'd be a defense-first kind of wing player that had some offensive growth to do. That's now flipped. I think his offense is definitely ahead of his defense at this point in time, but it's something where I do think there's at least a path for him defensively to get back on track. As for the Lloyd Pierce dynamic, I think Pierce will hopefully come in and demand excellence from Taurean on the defensive end of the floor. I'm not thinking he's going to be some sort of all-world defender, but again, there's no reason that he needs to be a poor defender. There's plenty of physical tools there as a small forward. I like to see him compete more. He definitely has it in him going back to college. I do think this is going to be a pivotal season, though, for Prince. I think there are a lot of people that are assuming that he's going to try harder now based on the fact that, the Hawks are rebuilding last year. But guess what? The Hawks are still rebuilding. And for me, that's not an excuse that really holds much water for a young player, especially. That was one that was used for Dennis Schroeder last year as well. It's like, well, he's not going to try defensively when the Hawks are not trying to win. And for me, for a young guy, that's not really acceptable. You're going to have to play hard on defense. I understand some slippage there, but the fact that he was kind of a bad defender last year doesn't really play well for me. So we'll see what happens in year three. I do think that I have some faith in that, but I think it's also a little bit aggressive to just assume he's going to defend at the same level next season. Offensively, obviously, he was very good last season, especially late in the season. As a shooter, 38.5% from three over the full season. That's very nice to see. And then 41% after the All-Star break is very, very good. I'm not sure he's that kind of elite level shooter. At the same time, I think it's no longer a concern for me. Coming into the NBA, shooting was at least somewhat of a concern for me, and that's no longer the case. I think he's going to be at least an average or better shooter from three-point range, which is very nice to have on the wing for someone who has his size and athleticism. I do think there's a school of thought out there that Prince could be more of a primary offensive option based on what happened at the end of last season, when kind of had the ball in his hands more often. I think he's definitely better as a supporting piece offensively, more of a floor spacer. It definitely helps that he can attack closeouts and kind of create for himself a little bit. But right now, with the ball in his hands, he's a really poor passer when compared to some guys that have the ball in their hands. There has been some improvement in that area, but something that he's going to have to get better at. He basically had almost the same amount of turnovers as assists last year. That's not a coincidence. I think he's going to have some growth to do do there, but frankly, in his role, what his role probably should be is more of a 3-and-D type. He doesn't necessarily have to have the ball in his hands a lot. I think he's going to be better off as like the third or fourth option offensively rather than the first or second where he was a lot of the time last year, especially late in the season. But still, offensively, I think he's ahead of where I would have thought he would be at this point in time, and that's a very nice thing to have for the Hawks. I guess to fully answer the question about the contract extension talks, Taurean, it wouldn't be this summer. He'll be next summer would be the extension window. You might remember the last time the Hawks gave out an extension, it was Dennis Schroeder. It was that 4-year deal that he actually is still in the middle of now. That did not go very well, but at the same time, Prince probably a little bit safer to do that with. You know, Schroeder famously at the point guard spot, it's kind of tough to build around a guy like that, whereas Prince, you could be a solid-ish player and kind of develop well in that area. I do think, again, he's going to have to defend, and it's going to be the hugest thing when you're talking about what to pay him next summer and beyond is the way he looks defensively. If he starts to buy in defensively, look like a two-way force, he could be a legitimate, solid starter money that's somewhere in the $15, $17, $18 million range annually. If he doesn't defend, I would have my guard up a little bit more on that. And of course, the Hawks do not have to extend him next summer. He can hit restricted free agency the following summer, and he would be a free agent in the summer of 2020 if that were to be the case. But it's a good problem to have, and of course, he is the one possible extension candidate next summer because I can't imagine DeAndre Bembry is going to be getting an extension. In fact, there's talk that he might not even have his fourth-year option picked up. So Prince will have a close eye on that, but I think if he plays the way that I think he can play defensively next season, you could be looking at a deal in the $15, $16, $17 million range annually. I'm not saying you have to do that if you're the Hawks because restricted free agency often works at the advantage of the team, especially in recent years. You can kind of squeeze guys a little bit, and he might not be able to get that much money, but if he has a great year this year, you might want to look to lock him in as well. So always tricky, and we'll talk about that more, of course, next summer when that all arrives. Next question on the podcast, and this is probably a little bit of a quicker answer, comes from Brantley, and he says, what does the future look like for Miles Plumlee? Plumlee is interesting because we don't talk about him a lot because I think everybody kind of knows the deal with Plumlee, but at the same time, $12.5 million this year, $12.5 million next year. He could be a stretch candidate, I think, next summer if the Hawks need the space. That'd be about $4.2 million over a three-year period. I think right now, though, there's no real urgency to either stretch him or trade him. In fact, they can't stretch him based on the some CBA stuff that I won't bore you with now, but they're not allowed to do that, and obviously they shouldn't do that anyway. At the same time, I think Plumlee's in a weird spot right now because with the current roster as it is now, the Hawks have no real reason to play him this season. They have Dwayne Dedmon, they have John Collins, they have Amari Spellman, they have Alex Len. All those guys should be ahead of Plumlee in the pecking order. I think actually there's a chance that right now, this moment, he's better than Amari Spellman because Spellman's a rookie, and that's kind of what happens. At the same time, the Hawks have no reason to test that theory. I think that Spellman should be ahead of Plumlee in the pecking order. We could see Plumlee a little bit if they want to take things slowly with Spellman, send him to the G League, all that fun stuff. That's at least a possibility, even for a guy who's a first-round draft pick. We saw Taurean Prince go to the G League. We saw DeAndre Bembry go to the G League. Collins did not do that necessarily, but one of those things where Spellman could have a little bit of development to do, and the Hawks may want to do a little bit of that in Erie, and if that's the case, then you could see some of Plumlee, but barring injury, I can't see him being in a rotation for a long time this year, and frankly, it's pretty much dead money when it comes to Plumlee. The signing of Alex Len almost ensured that Plumlee's not going to be playing very much this season, again, unless there's an injury or something weird. Like, I guess there could be a Dwayne Dedmon trade that could open the door for Plumlee to play more, but I think it's basically dead money. I'm not saying he's completely worthless. In fact, I think he'd be on an NBA team somewhere if he was not under contract. He'd just probably be for the minimum, and it's one of those things where, $12.5 million a year is a lot of money for Miles Plumlee. So it's not to say that he's, again, completely ineffective, but for a team that's trying to rebuild right now, he's basically just an albatross. They knew that when they traded for him, probably, and it's a situation where I think not until next summer will we really start talking about legitimate options to shed that contract in some way, whether it be via trade or by a stretch. Next question comes from Joe White. This is sort of the last major question that we'll answer on the pod today. And he asks, we haven't heard much from Kevin Huerter. Is there a possibility with his skill set he could be slept on much in the way that John Collins was? I think with Huerter, to answer this question, I think the lack of buzz with Huerter is basically just him not playing in Summer League. That kind of hurts with the buzz cycle because of the fact that Summer League is such a big deal now in terms of just coverage and the general consciousness. Huerter not being available to play there sort of hurts his hype train, which is fine. Honestly, there's no reason to think that's a problem. They knew about the injury when they drafted him. It wasn't a new injury. He also wasn't a super famous college player. He was on a fairly anonymous Maryland team, and a lot of that juice probably from the college ranks didn't really apply to him. He was a late riser in the draft, was sort of a hype guy in the draft, but prior to that was pretty much unknown, and the fact that he didn't play in Summer League kind of hurts the hype train a little bit. I do think that, he's a perfectly fine pick for me. It kind of was always a sort of a mad decision the Hawks made. I wasn't surprised by it at all. I had him somewhere in the high 20s. Low 20s, whatever you want to say. Somewhere between 21-25, somewhere in there. So it wasn't like a huge reach for me. I do like Kevin Huerter as a player, and his shooting was always going to be interesting. And that's the reason why he was drafted, of course. But he's also a pretty good playmaker and has some good size, especially at the shooting guard spot. So definitely have some realistic expectations about him. But he's a guy who could definitely play a little bit. I don't think that there's a reasonable expectation, though, that he could be on the same level as John Collins because of the fact that Collins is a high-end outcome of 19 overall. Obviously, you're always going to compare Huerter and Collins because they were the exact same draft slot, but Collins is working out better than I think almost anyone would have imagined, frankly. So if you have that expectation for Huerter, that's pretty aggressive. If Huerter is looking like a rotation player in 2 years, that'd be a huge win for a mid to late first round pick. His shooting, just a very different player, but he's not really that kind of hype train kind of player. There's not a situation where, you know, he's gonna be dunking on everybody like that. He's actually a pretty good athlete, and Huerter can really shoot it. That's gonna be where his primary value lies, but not gonna be someone who's gonna come in as a rookie and sort of make an impact in the way that John Collins did, just because Collins was pretty NBA ready, especially offensively and with his rebounding, whereas Huerter, it's going to have to take some time, I think. But the shooting does help, and I think hopefully he'll be up to speed and healthy enough when training camp starts to the point where he can actually make an impact early on. But it would not surprise me at all, going back to what I said a minute ago about Amari Spellman, it would not blow me away if either one of those guys spent some time in the G League this year. I know first-round picks don't always go to the G League, but because of Herter's, you know, lack of development over the summer and the fact that Spellman's kind of buried a little bit, Hawks might want to just play him. I do think it does help if you want to root for those guys to play more in Atlanta, that this team's not going to be trying to win necessarily. Of course, they're going to be trying to win on a nightly basis, but not, you know, scheming for that. They're going to be trying to play veterans over these guys. And I think if Huerter shows himself to be playable early on, you'll see more of him than I'm probably saying right now. But he does have some guys to contend with for playing time, whether it be Tyler Dorsey or, you know, Daniel Hamilton, Justin Anderson. All those guys are going to be sort of, and, you know, even DeAndre Bembry is going to kind of all be in that same bucket, especially if Kent Bazemore's still on this roster. There aren't that many minutes to go around on the wing, so we'll keep an eye on Kevin Huerter there. But I do think, again, at this moment, they have a lot of wings. It will surprise me if Huerter is like a major rotation piece early on in the season, just because, you know, at some point you're going to have to play the guys who are on your roster who are going to be better than him right away. I do think, you know, moving forward, he clearly is ahead of guys like Anderson and Dorsey and Hamilton in terms of what the team's going to be evaluating. But, you know, he also might not be as good as a guy like Anderson or a guy like Hamilton right now, who have been pros for a while and might be more playable early on. So keep an eye on Kevin Huerter. But that's the reason why he's going to sort of being slept on, as the question put it right now, could be the fact that he was just kind of anonymous over the summer. And that's not a bad thing at all. We'll definitely be paying close attention to him when the season rolls around, because he's a first round pick and those guys are always under the microscope more than everybody else are. So one last quick one comes from DJ Yogi on Twitter. Asks, which is your favorite Atlanta Hawks uniform? This is actually coming out of, there was some talk today. There was actually, I believe it was NBA on TNT, put out a picture of Vince Carter in an old school sort of mid 90s, the black and the black, red, and sort of famous Mutombo jerseys, as sort of a thought experiment there. My favorite Hawks uniform is the early 80s red, yellow, and white. You might remember that most likely from the Josh Smith dunk contest when he wore the Dominique jersey. That's my favorite jersey that the Hawks have ever worn. I do like the blue and green. That's sort of the famous one, the pistol jersey. It's just very different, not really Hawksy. And there's a couple of others. I don't hate the one from the mid-90s necessarily, but it's not great. And there's a couple from the 80s that were more traditional, red, yellow, and white. I'm kind of that kind of guy. But at the same time, I really didn't like the blue jerseys from earlier in the decade, the Joe Johnson era, where they went to the white, red, and blue. That was not my favorite thing in the world. He also asked sort of the current jerseys. I think red is my least favorite, which is probably controversial. I think that's one of the ones that's more popular, but they have the three right now, the red, white, and the Georgia granite gray. I prefer the gray ones. They're, you know, sort of darker color. I like, that's my favorite one with sort of the checker boxes, all that fun stuff. I do like those the best, followed by the white and the red. I think the red problem is the lettering I don't like. The ATL is kind of funny. But anyway, this is not necessarily important, but it's one of those things where every once in a while I want to show everybody that I do have a pulse. I'm not a robot, and it's mostly basketball talk here. 99% basketball talk on the podcast, but you know, jerseys are fun. So if you have a favorite jersey, please tweet that at me, either at Locked On Hawks or at BT Roll, and yell at me if you don't like my take. But for me, it's early 80s one that you know, I guess if you're a little bit younger, you would definitely not have any recollection of Dominique wearing that jersey. But if you might have a recollection of Josh Smith in the dunk contest, if you want to Google that, it's probably the easiest way to find that particular jersey. That's the one I'm talking about. If you want to put that in the Google machine, I would recommend that, to be sure. So thanks for listening to today on the podcast, everybody. If there's breaking news over the weekend, I will pop back in, but at this point, point in the calendar. That's few and far between. So we'll come back next week with a guest or two that I have on the agenda. We'll talk some big picture stuff and try to get through August together, because it's always the down month on the NBA calendar. But we're not going anywhere, I promise. We'll be back next week with more content. And until then, stay tuned.